Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. Larry Miller has one of those Hollywood faces that you recognize instantly, even if you can't always remember all of his credits or even his name. But with more than 100 film and TV credits on his resume, Miller has made a career of sometimes short but memorable roles on screen in Pretty Woman, 10 Things I Hate About You, The Nutty Professor, Boston Legal, Seinfeld, Law & Order, Desperate Housewives, and as a member of the ensemble in Christopher Guest's masterpieces Best in Show, A Mighty Wind, For Your Consideration, and Waiting for Guffman, to name a few. Miller is a Renaissance man, a stand-up comedian with HBO specials, a Broadway stage actor, a podcast host of This Week with Larry Miller, a humorist who's published in The Huffington Post, Maxim, The Weekly Standard, and the author of the 2006 book Spoiled Rotten America. He's also starring in his one-man show, Cocktails with Larry Miller, around the country. Larry Miller performs his stand-up act at the Paramount Theater in Middletown on Saturday, October 26th at 8 o'clock, and it's my pleasure to welcome him to the Roundtable. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Ian. Thanks. You know, it's a pleasure to... I love working around the country. There are so many beautiful theaters to do stand-up in and a one-man show. But I'll tell you what, it was really fun to... As you were reading some of the credits there, I thought, hey, I'm doing pretty good.
You're from New York originally, right?
Yes.
So do you enjoy performing back in New York, you know, in the Hudson Valley or in the city?
You know something? The truth is I enjoy it everywhere, and that's no baloney. There is no feeling to me of, well, I was born in Brooklyn and grew up on Long Island, and I've worked in Brooklyn many times and on Long Island many times, but there's no feeling like, oh, great, I'm home now. It's just thinking, this is another good theater with another good audience, and that's the best it can be. I'm looking forward to Middletown because for someone like me, if you love this stuff, I've never been to Middletown, and I've never met that audience there, and I'm really looking forward to that. And at the Paramount, or as I had it written down here, the historic Paramount. Oh,
sorry.
Well, don't be silly. I mean, as far as I knew, I didn't know whether that was the theater manager just putting that in like an adjective or whether it was called the historic Paramount. But in any case, there's no one place that's better than the other. I look forward to getting there, rehearsing, setting things up, and then thinking, this will be a good show.
How did you first get on the stage? I mean, were you in, like, high school drama class, or was it earlier than that?
I was in a couple of plays in high school, but I was a music major in college, and in high school, I was part of the orchestras on the side. Orchestra is probably too large a word for what we had on the side. But I was part of those, and I really liked that. So it was, you know, if they needed a doorbell, I was a drummer, so I would play the chimes for the doorbell. And so I guess I did a couple of things in high school, but I never really thought about acting till, well, after college, where I started thinking, okay, what are you going to do now, Potato Head? And I thought, well, maybe something with music, maybe something with stand-up comedy, maybe something with acting. And you know what? I'm the luckiest guy in the world because I'm doing all of those things.
Was there a period between, like, say, college graduation and, you know, getting a break or something where it was rough?
No. I know the answer should be more involved than that. But no, there wasn't. I had, look, stand-up comedy can be great when a guy grew up in the streets. But it's not because he grew up in the streets. It's because the guy is good. And in my case, to really love someone who's a great storyteller and to be a storyteller, well, it's not because there was any really hard times. Even the hard times in quotes, standing in the rain on a line in front of a comedy club, that was never hard to me.
Mm-hmm.
And if there were other guys on that line, and I know there were, who hated it, said, oh, wow, we're standing in the rain, this stinks, or other words. But you know what? I never minded. And when I first started at the comic strip in New York, I was there 7 nights a week for the entire show. And I mean 7 till 3 in the morning. And just watching all the other comics, just loving it, and then getting on at the end of the show. And so someone else might say, well, that was hard. Well, not to me. It was a great way to learn how to be a comic.
Were there a few who specifically influenced you, or who were some of the guys and girls you came up with?
Well, folks would know some of the knuckleheads in my crew. There was, well, Seinfeld, mm-hmm. Paul Reiser, Jimmy Brogan, and Mark Schiff, Carol Leifer. But, again, it's not that I thought, wow, they're really good. We're all really good. It's not that they thought, wow, we're all really good. It's that, well, we were, it's like having friends in the eighth grade in junior high. And those are just your friends. So now when, if Seinfeld comes out with his wife and we go out for breakfast with my wife, and especially when his show became a big hit, people would say, you know, reporters would call and say, hey, you know, I heard you went out with Seinfeld. What did you talk about? And I, the only answer I had was, eggs? I don't know. I mean, there was coffee. It's just that we're friends. We like being together. So it's not as if anything was revealed. You know, it's not as if anyone leaned over and whispered, there's something I've been thinking about and I must tell you now. And so I think that's the best way to be in show business. I think if you read about all the stars of the last 80 or 100 years from movies and television and theater, but that's the way they were. They said, well, let's get together and have some dinner. What will you talk about? Who cares?
So the Seinfeld web series, the cars and coffee thing, is pretty close to your experience with him.
I think so, yeah. It absolutely is, and that's one of the reasons I think it's a great show. And one of the reasons, by the way, his show on NBC was a great show. He and Larry David and all the really good, talented people they had working there, just they found things to say and ways to say them, to tell these stories that really was something people had never seen before, because it was, well, as real as they could make it.
Did the acting or the comedy come to you first? I mean, you're a prodigious writer and a comedy writer, but performance-wise, like, when did you realize that you were funny and you had a very specific point of view?
Well, that's a good question. I started as a comic. I always loved stand-up comedy, and I still think it's one of the purest, most wonderful things. If you think about it, too, you know, to walk out on a stage and there's nothing there, nothing. That's really a great form. It's beyond telling stories around a campfire, but there's still something perfect about putting on a play, whether it's in the ancient Greek theater or today. Telling a story like that is wonderful too, and to combine them in, well, a one-man show like this that I love doing. I don't know whether I liked one better than the other, but I was doing something I don't know if any of my other friends were doing, even when we all moved out to Los Angeles and starting to work on the road a bit. And well, I was still starting to be in plays, too, because I thought, well, I want to be an actor. And then I was writing scripts. Why? Well, I want to be a writer. And my friends would say, well, why are you doing these other things? And I thought, I would say, gee, I don't know. I want to do these things. So it's winding up really well. I hope to, if I live for another 500 years, and I'm planning to, but if I do, it'll be as an actor and a comic. And the answer to the question, what did you do better or what did you love more, is I don't know. But I know the one I'm going to love more in Middletown on the 26th. And this is no baloney. I'm going to love that audience in that theater, and I'm going to love stand-up comedy more than anything.
Is there something you haven't done in this business that you kind of still have on your bucket list?
Yeah, I've never really got the phrase bucket list. I know what it means. But that the things before you go that you really have to do or want to do, there's so much more to do in acting, writing, and stand-up. I mean, so much more. Now, would I also like to be in a musical and sing and stand there with, you know, your legs spread, arms akimbo, and just, you know, really hold forth to the audience? Sure, I'd love to do that. And, well, that'll probably happen, but you never know where things are going to go. When that play came up to be in the Neil Simon play on Broadway, mm-hmm. It was, John Lovitz has been a friend for a long time, and I saw one of the producers on the lot Well, show business is funny this way. I was on the Disney lot working on a show, and he was in the next studio, and he came by and said, yeah, hi, how you doing? Good to see you. And so we chatted for a minute, and then he saw Lovitz after that and said, hey, I just saw Larry, and he says hi. At that second, Lovitz was being offered that show, that play on Broadway. And he said, you know, Larry would be perfect for that, too. We should do that together. Because they had already asked him, is there someone you'd like to work with? And, well, that's how that happened. And, you know, a blink of an eye later, I was sitting with Lovitz and Neil Simon, for crying out loud, in an office in Hollywood. And I thought that was great. And as we walked out, Lovitz said to me, we drove over together, and he said to me, well, I guess we're going to do this. And I said, really? How do you know? And he said, well, we're going to do it. He's going to give it to you. At any rate, so that's wonderful stuff. Is there anything to do that more than that? Well, sure. I'd like to do another play, for crying out loud, on Broadway or all across the country. And, boy, I'll tell you what, though, each one of those things, to move the family back east into Manhattan and to show the kids what buses are and subways are, that was great. They loved it. And they came to the play once, but they already know me.
Hmm.
So they didn't need to see too much more of that.
And that was when you did The Dinner Party.
It's a great play, The Dinner Party. And that was done, by the way, show business being what it is, at the Music Box Theater, which was Irving Berlin's theater. He built that in 1912 or something like that, 1908. I mean, that's really extraordinary. And I came back east to do another shot on the David Letterman show, to do stand-up. This was about a year ago. And I was just rehearsing the shot in my head. I walked out of the hotel room on the day it was showing. That day it was, a recording. And I walked down through Broadway, and I thought, well, why don't I just take a look at the Music Box Theater again? I walked past the Music Box Theater. This is about 11 in the morning or 11:30, and sure enough, the stage manager was there just leaning on the stage door, and he said, hey, Larry, how you doing? I said, for crying out loud. Hey, Tim. And we started talking, and he said, come on and take a look at the place. And there was nothing on the stage. They were in between plays. And suddenly I got the idea. I said, hey, would you mind if I spent an hour here just rehearsing my shot for the Letterman show today, just walking out and pretending this is the audience and this is the theater? He said, yeah, go ahead. Do a good job. I must have run that thing 15 or 20 times, and it helped immeasurably, but I was always aware of the fact, can you imagine this, how weird show business is? Here I'm at the same Music Box Theater I was working in a Neil Simon play. Now I'm on the boards again, and it's empty, but not to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a beautiful place to me. And the stage manager was there, and when we left, we shook hands. I said, thanks, take care. And I strolled back up to the hotel. But I think that's a pretty good show business story to say, how did you get ready for the Letterman show? Well, here's how.
I want to go back to that because you said you ran through for about an hour, and you've done Letterman a lot, but you get, what, 4 or 5 minutes, and you have to be kind of mid-set form in order to connect with the audience in that short of a time. I imagine that has to be quite a challenge.
Yeah, but here's the thing. It's not a mid-set form. You have to write and pick and rehearse and keep substituting things, because a five-minute shot is very different from an hour on stage. It's very different from anything. It's like saying a 100-yard dash is very different from a marathon, and it is. So I'll tell you that rehearsing that shot and writing it out here in Hermosa Beach at the Comedy and Magic Club, I mean, going down every night and rehearsing it and then saying, that's not it, and then, talking with some of the fellas backstage, some friends saying, I think I should replace this with that. Because I'm telling you, every segue, every change, every line that moves one piece into another has to be, in 5 minutes, has to be exact. And everyone who's listening knows this is true. When you're watching a comic on The Tonight Show, on Letterman, on anything, you just know if it's not perfect. You just know if it's not exactly working. You just know if suddenly he says, Well, you know, it's funny. It's the same at airports and just changes topics. You just know it. But if you work hard on that shot, and, well, if you run it on the stage in an empty music box theater, you know what? It really helps, and it's nothing at all, nothing like, well, being in a theater and doing an hour and a half.
So on average, then, let's say you're booked for Letterman, how much prep time or how many rehearsals do you go through in order to distill down to that 5 minutes?
Well, a lot. I mean, there's one of those Letterman shots I did came up just a few days before the shot. And I said to my manager and the agent at the time, I said, well, that doesn't give me any time. And they said the right thing. They said, don't be an idiot. And so I said, you know, you're right. So I did one of the best shots I've ever done on that show. But if you really do it the right way, I mean the way I like best, well, you take months and keep tinkering with it. It's like sculpture. You there in the day in the office with your laptop open, you keep going up to that big block of marble on a sculpture and keep going tink, 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 and then you step back and look at it and think about it. Well, that's what good stand-up comedy is. And if you love it, you don't mind. And I love it, and I don't mind.
See, there's an anger in women. It's very deep. And it's very old. And it connects them all in a straight line back to the beginning, back to Adam and Eve, when they both ate the forbidden fruit and God came down and said, who ate that apple? And Adam stepped up and said, she did. And Eve said, really? Hand me that fig leaf. That's the last time you're gonna see this.
I have to ask you also about your experience working with Christopher Guest in a run of his films, including probably the funniest scene in Best in Show. How does that relationship work? Because I know that there's a lot of improv that happens within the sketches, kind of existing outlines of where the characters are going, but it seems like you have a lot of leeway once the cameras are rolling in order to kind of explore where your character will go.
Yeah, well, there's got to be a stronger word than leeway. I mean, I can't admire him more. I love Christopher Guest as a director, as a storyteller. These are amazing things he makes, and he and Eugene Levy just really write outlines for it. But the whole point is that if you trust him, he leaves the camera on for long takes, and if you trust him, and I do, and everybody does, he's really good as he's watching you, then it's all improv. So, for instance, in the Best in Show scene, they got, oh, it was great. Linda Cash was playing my wife. She's been in a few of those, too. And they got a great kid to play our kid. He was a good actor. And he really had a great way of looking, well, like a lunatic. And so we just began to improv on that. And I was telling the story of being the hostage negotiator. And that's all just came into my head.
I'm the chief hostage negotiator for the Akron and Tri-County area. And I talk people down. When they ever get a jumper on a big building, they call me.
How many people have you talked down? I mean, is there a...
Well, they always jump. I've got news for you. It's a little secret from the trade. They all jump. But today we have a tough one. There's a guy, he jumps. It doesn't bother me. It happens all the time. But you see, you think they drop like rocks. They don't. He hit a gargoyle on the way down. This guy gets his head caught in the gargoyle's mouth. The head pops off like a grape. The body continues to spin down like a whirligig. When they hit, everything pops out. It's like a pinata. The intestines, like they're spring-loaded, pop out. You know, forgive me, I was actually, you know what? You know what I was just remembering? That time with you and me at the lake with the pinata, remember?
Hey, let me tell you something. They all jump. But that just came out, and that works. And then it works as this kind of awful guy just ruling his family. And, well, the way it winds up, just yelling at the kid on the top of the shed there to get down. But those movies are all great that way. I have met actors I really like as friends who are in those movies. And I'm telling you, they get dressed up. Like Jennifer Coolidge, they get dressed up for certain parts in that. Or It happened also with Jane Lynch, where you walk along on the stage and someone says, hey, hi, and you nod and smile, hi. And then when we talk later, she said, gee, I thought you didn't like me anymore. I said, holy mackerel, I didn't even know that was you.
Huh.
Because the way they do the hair, put the clothes on, the way they act, it's really a different person. So that guy, Christopher Guest, and those guys, him and Eugene, really know how to make movies that count. And I think they count. There was a woman I knew who was in production, who was an executive at Universal, and she said she always kept waiting for Guffman as what she called a boyfriend test. And she said if there was a... Well, she had had 3 or 4 dates with someone, and she thought, maybe this could turn into something. She would always invite him over and make a dinner in her apartment, and then after dinner, they'd watch Waiting for Guffman. And if he said, gee, that's a stupid movie, I don't get that, well, I don't even know why you have it, she would say, hand him his hat and say, it's very nice to see you, thank you very much, but I think this is the end for us. And if he laughed and thought, that is so different, I've never seen anything like that, and it's so funny, then she'd think, well, there may be something here.
I have to ask you one more linguistic question. You've taken issue with the terms leeway and bucket list, so let me throw one more at you.
Okay.
Character actor.
Well, first of all, these words are as good as anything, because you have to call them something. And I've always defined character actor as anyone in the movie not kissing the star actress.
Which is a lot of people.
Yeah. So if you're in a movie with Renee Zellweger, who's great, and if 2 weeks have gone by and you haven't kissed her in a scene, that's how you know, oh, I see, I'm a character actor. And it's a great thing to be. Look at all the, for crying out loud, even the greatest stars and lead stars have been really stars through characters they did. I don't know why the name Humphrey Bogart just came into my head. For crying out loud, look at the great parts he did. And they're just eternal. And, well, what is that part like? Well, he's playing a character. And, well, he also got a chance to kiss Ingrid Bergman a lot. But I'm telling you, there's nothing wrong with the phrase character actor. Nothing wrong with any of these things. But once they get used a lot, that's when I start to think, am I using that word too much?
Larry Miller will be in our region at the historic, there it is, historic Paramount Theater, Saturday, October the 26th at 8 o'clock. There's more information at MiddletownParamount.com. Of course, you can listen to Larry Miller on his podcast This Week with Larry Miller. And I just want to say it's been a pleasure to speak with you, and we're really excited to have you in the region.
Ian, same here. And I can't wait to come there. And if you get there, make sure you come by and say hello.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.